it just makes sense to me that the purpose of us being here is actually just being on that journey, right? It's not that the end destination, because the end destination is the same. It's just the fact that we are actively creating ourselves on a daily basis.
Life is busy. Schedules are full. Money is tough. Marriage is tough. Kids, family, friends, work, housework. Ew. There is so much on our plate these days, and I think it's time we start taking stuff off. The Unstuffed podcast is a minimalist lifestyle and mindset podcast created to help you feel a little less overwhelmed and is designed to help give you the permission to eliminate any of life's clutter that's not working for you. You only get one life after all, and it's so much bigger than all this other stuff. So sit back, take a walk. It's your turn to take a break, and I will take over from here. Welcome to the Unstuffed podcast. Hey there, it's me, Renee. Welcome back to the Unstuffed podcast. Something you may not know about me is that I absolutely love a good quit my job story. Something I might not have shared with you is that one of the things that inspired me toward my minimalist journey was hearing stories of people who were leaving their high-paying corporate jobs to pursue passion in their life, or people who decided that they wanted to travel the world and leave everything behind. Basically, anyone who was willing to just let go of everything so that they could start fresh. It's kind of the whole reason why I decided to create my 40-day audio series, The Escape Plan, for anybody else who wanted to do these huge, dramatic shifts in their life. But today I was lucky enough to sit down with one of these kinds of people who gets to tell that story about quitting your six-figure, high-paying corporate job to pursue a life of finding purpose and helping others do the same. I sat down with Jean-Francois, who is the founder of Wabia, which is a coaching program that helps connect coaches to people who need them. This was such a truly amazing conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I loved having it. And I'm just going to give you a heads up that in case it's not obvious to you, I am coming off of a cold here. So my voice is a little funky, but the conversation's amazing. I promise it'll be worth it. One of the questions I get asked the most is what my favorite books are. That's why I have taken the time to bundle them all together into my top 50 book recommendations just for you. If you want to download them, it's totally free. Head to reneebennis.com/books, and I will send you my 50 top books in fiction, nonfiction, money, mindset, and more. Well, hi, Jean-Francois. I'm so excited to have you here.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me, Renee.
Yeah, so as we dive into the episode here today, do you want to kind of fill everybody in on your backstory and what you've got going on?
Yeah, expansive question. Well, I am French-Canadian by birth, so I grew up around Montreal. And yeah, I guess I think one thing that's important to get across to me really is the notion that I've always been really into helping people. Like when I was younger, I would always try to be the one, like, you know, pulling teams together if we were, like, for example, at day camp or anything like that. Even I was a lifeguard for many years, you know, for 7-8 years during my teenages and into my early 20s. Which was the best job in the world. Wouldn't change anything about it. But it was, you know, about saving lives and keeping people safe. And as I got older, although I didn't have really a framework for it, I got really involved in people's problems, you know, like trying to help them, sometimes probably a little bit of a bull in a china shop approach to it. And I guess this kind of sets the scene a little bit about who I am and what drove me eventually after a 14-year corporate career to basically burn out. I'm sure we'll get into this, but as a result of that burnout, I did a lot of soul searching and a lot of thinking about who I was, what mattered to me, why I was here, right? What my purpose is on earth. I don't want to get too spiritual, but I do believe that there are things beyond my comprehension, you know, that the universe is extremely powerful and we're just along for the ride in many ways. And so I guess, you know, this burnout was kind of a culmination of probably me fighting against my own nature for quite a long time. And as a result of that, and as a result of discovering my purpose, which is to help others realize their purpose, I decided to create a vehicle that would help people self-realize. And that's Wabia, so the business that that my co-founder and I are building, which is a coaching platform where we match coaches and clients together. But it's really, it's about helping people from all walks of life self-realize. So as you can see, you know, going from like my youth into my adulthood, I think the thread is consistent in the sense of wanting to help people and elevate the collective by helping individuals, basically. So that's the Cliff Notes version, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, that's so huge. And I relate to that on such a deep level. I've spending my morning thinking about this is I started my podcast talking about minimalism and simplifying, but I do it in a lot of ways because I think a lot of times we can get distracted by the things that we own and it can take away from who we are or the bigger picture of our lives. So finding the way to talk about that has been kind of tricky, but I feel that so much so. And I don't know if you know this about me, but that was kind of why my minimalist journey started was like, I need to figure out my purpose. And I know I'm not doing something right. Something felt off. And just this decision to kind of simplify everything else so that I could kind of figure out what my next steps were or where to go. You know, that was a huge part of it for me. So I very much relate to that.
Yeah, I guess here's a question for you. Like, I love the notion of the entry point because I think, and I've experienced that with a lot of my coaching clients, for example, right? There's, and myself as well, right? I need to do it this way. And this is how going through taking these actions are actually going to open up a lot of doors and windows that I can then explore. So what came as a result then of starting with the minimalism and how has this evolved for you?
Well, the funny thing is it was through a lot of spirituality books, actually, that I kind of started to get a different picture. And for some reason, I think a lot of times, for me at least, the things that we're meant to pursue or do in life, I feel like we get little breadcrumbs for it. So I kind of kept getting little breadcrumbs of, you know, where I would hear stories about people who were facing burnout and just kind of decided to let go of it all. They sold their house and got rid of their things and just kind of that renouncing the possessions message sort of kept finding its way to me. So we did that. I started decluttering and simplifying. We wound up downsizing our house because I wanted to have a little bit more freedom and flexibility to pursue different things. And oddly enough, it turns out minimalism and sharing that message was exactly where I was supposed to be. So it's kind of funny how I felt like I was meant for something different. Wasn't sure what it was. Used minimalism to figure it out. And then apparently that was where I was meant to be, you know.
The thing that you felt driven to do was actually what you needed to do. It's almost as if the journey was actually the destination you were trying to reach.
So
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, I can totally relate. And I think that this notion of, and I'm trying to use this as a mantra a bit more, the fact that we're all going to end up the same way, right? The inevitable end, at least for this, you know, physical body, right? Again, without getting too much into spirituality, but everybody's going to die, right? And I think if everybody understands that this is how, you know, things end, at least for this life, then it just makes sense to me that the purpose of us being here is actually just being on that journey, right? It's not the end destination, because the end destination is the same. It's just the fact that we are actively creating ourselves on a daily basis. I was even thinking about this today, and I was just like, man, I really need to enjoy this, because I know that in 5 years, when I think about all the little nitty bitty problems that I'm having right now, or I think that I'm having, they're not going to be problems. And actually, I'm probably not even going to remember them. And I know this now because I'm getting older and I can think about, man, I was really stroppy as a teenager and everything seemed to be like the end of the world. And do you know what I mean? But now I can't think of a single thing where I really remember like feeling deeply violated and it stuck with me for 20, 25 years or whatever it is. So I think perspective is incredibly important. And I think ironically, a great giver of perspective is just time. You kind of have to live a little bit. So anyway, I'll stop here.
Oh, no, you're fine. I hate that. I hate that we have to have time. It sounds so silly, but I'm one of those people. I'm like, can't we just figure? I just want it figured out. If someone just gives me the steps, I'll follow the steps and I'll do it so that I have it all figured out. But there is so much beauty in the lessons that we learn. You're so right. And that's something that I do too. So it's funny that you say that. I do it a lot with money, where I would, if we like have $1,000 car repairs, I would focus on it and tell everybody over and over again. And I finally got to this point, I'm like, how many times in my life have I done this now where I freak out about this big financial setback? Now I can't even tell you what any of them were, because we overcame and it's fine. We got through it. We survived it. So I guess I shouldn't continue letting it suck all my energy today because I'll get through it just like I did before, you know?
Yeah. I love this analogy because there's a material aspect to it, right? Which makes me think of what you were talking about, decluttering, right? So money, which buys stuff, right? But there's also, I think, a mental aspect in terms of decluttering your thoughts from these recurring kind of, what's the right word? It's almost like garbage, right? You have these thoughts that keep coming up that really actually don't serve anything. And they're just kind of recurring. And, you know, I've, since I burned out, I have implemented a meditation practice. And I think one of my biggest realizations over the last 3 years has been actually my thoughts are my thoughts and they're going to happen whether I want to or not. So they're always going to be there. I think the job has to be with being comfortable with just sitting with whatever they are and not capturing that moment when they're making you feel angry or anxious, for example, going back to money challenges, because I think everyone can relate to that. I think I thought about it multiple times today. But again, I love how, you know, the synchronicity of this, because you were just talking about this. I was thinking about this today. And even today, when I was thinking about this, I was like, okay, it's fine. I'm thinking about money. Money is necessary to do a whole lot of things. But actually, do I have a roof over my head? Do I have food on my table? Is there any risk of me losing any of those things right now? The answer is no. This notion of creating these like monstrous kind of scenarios, like I think our brains are really good at creating stuff that isn't really there. And that triggers real physical emotions. And sometimes it's hard to get out of these physical emotions. That's why people go to therapy and, you know, experience sometimes physical breakdowns. So yeah, I love that we've come a little bit full circle in the sense that we talked about decluttering your life. And now we're talking about decluttering kind of your mind, right? And the beauty in like simplifying things.
Yeah. And that's something I've been able to do through decluttering my things is kind of letting go of the same mindsets and being more aware. I don't know if you've heard or read the book, The Untethered Soul.
Yeah, I have.
That's what, when you're talking about kind of just being aware of your thoughts, that's something I've shared with my daughter who was sick last week. I'm now recovering from sickness from her. But I told her, because she struggles with, you know, stressful negative thoughts a lot of times. And I said, well, maybe if you just observe it like it's a play. You're kind of paying, like you're listening to the actors talk, because if we're able to observe those thoughts, we don't have to take them so seriously. We can kind of just hear them out and hear what they have to say, you know?
Yeah, I love that. That was a bit of a game changer, that book, a couple of years ago when I first read, and I was like, it's explained in such a, to me, what stuck with me was the movie screen analogy.
The
picture that you're sitting in a movie theater and you're just watching your brain just go off and create these crazy stories that have not a lot of basis in reality in so many instances. I'm so glad that you're passing that on to your daughter. I was having a chat with a coach earlier, a possible coach for Wabia, and she was deploring the fact that nobody really teaches us any of this, or has nobody taught us any of this. You know, my parents certainly didn't. It wasn't part of their upbringing, so I didn't get this at home. I certainly didn't get this from the education system, you know, in Canada. There were elements of it in religion class, maybe in high school or something. But even that was couched in so much parables and like stories and instead of, you know, practical stuff. And I'm just so happy that you're passing this on to the next generation. This coach was basically passing on her vision of a world that can be driven by a sense of purpose to her daughter. So I think that bodes well for the future.
Yeah. Do you feel like we're kind of at a time and a place now where we as humans can do this? You know, I think back, I read a lot of different books that talk about, you know, the 1950s, technology started happening, you know, washing machines and things, you know, and they thought we'd have so much time. And so many people talk about how we're wasting the time. But I think a lot of people, I know a lot of people that are doing this work, this deeper dive soul purpose finding work, this healing work. And it's kind of the first time we've been able to do it, really, you know, at least in the most recent 100 past years of our history that we know about.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I've never really thought about this. Makes me think of whoever the person is that wrote Sapiens. That sounds like the kind of stuff that they'd be talking about. Yeah. I mean, gosh, how can we predict what this generation will bring, right? Like I'm thinking about like self-awareness. I've worked with university students, for example. I was nowhere near as switched on as they are. back then. I think there's something about the connectivity that the internet has provided us with and how smaller the world has gotten, how much information now younger generations are able to ingest and everything. I think that's quite powerful. I don't know if it's cluttering things in a different way. Maybe there's just so much to ingest and also, my God, I need to be like this or I need to be like that. I think that's quite prevalent in teens and people in their 20s that I've spoken to. I do feel that maybe we have more capability or ability to do that. I just hope it keeps on happening, right? Because I think the idea, isn't it, to, I guess, raise the level for individuals, right? And get people close. Actually, let me rephrase that. My purpose is to help others realize their purpose, because my belief fundamentally is that the closer you get to self-realizing, right? Realizing in the sense of really exploring and discovering who you are. So realization is a discovery, but also realizing in terms of creating that ideal of yourself in the real world. The closer you get to that, then the better it is for people around you. You know, in point in case, in this conversation, I think you've mentioned, you know, your journey, but also the fact that you've educated yourself with regards to these deeper considerations, perhaps. And now actually what you're doing is you've set up this podcast where we are having these discussions and people can listen in on this. And you're talking to your daughter about this, and that's going to influence her to maybe influence her friends at school, right? So I think our ripples probably have a much wider reach now, maybe as a result of the era that we're sitting in. But have you noticed any of this in your entourage since you've started this kind of self-realization process that you've been on?
You know, I find, especially through the podcast, I'm really thankful to find more and more people who I think are doing the deeper dive work. And that's, I hear so many negative things about specifically like social media and things like that. And social media has been a big part of sharing my message and things like that. But for me, the people that I have on my social media, the people that I've met and have connected with, have really done a lot of the deep dive work, or kind of having these deeper thoughts, which for me, almost like 10 years ago when I started kind of my journey, I didn't know anybody who was talking this way or thinking this way. It was just kind of show up, live your life, you know, purpose, very kind of purposeless, which it was just living versus kind of being alive, being on purpose. And so, yeah, I suppose there has been a huge shift if I compare then to now, you know.
Do you think that maybe there were a lot of you in isolation, except maybe we weren't connected as much back then? This feels like a loaded question, but I'll let you answer it.
I think there was like a huge movement, probably had to have been happening, because I've seen a huge shift, and it's so confusing. Now, I've seen a huge shift happen in the world. Is that because I've shifted and therefore I'm observing this shift, or is it because the shift has happened? You know, I don't know.
What do you think? What does it feel like?
I feel like a shift has happened. I feel like there has been a big transformation.
Could the two be true as well? The fact that you have made this shift happen for yourself actually means that you've created this shift, unless you're seeing this shift, right? I'm going to simplify this, you know, to lowest common denominator, but it's like almost saying red car.
Yeah.
You just bought a red car, and then suddenly, like, holy crap, there's red cars everywhere. This is like the most popular color on the planet. I guess I do believe that the two things are true. And I think this is one of the things I'm realizing about life, is that everything is and everything isn't. And those two things coexist at the same time. And I think that's the beauty of life, right? I think you can see, even going back to what we were just discussing about a few moments ago, right? I'm not my thoughts, but actually my thoughts are part of me. So how can those two things be true? Because they shouldn't be true. If I'm saying I'm not my thoughts, I can't be my thoughts, right? I think as physical beings, we have a hard time maybe capturing the notion that things can be and not be at the same time. But I think this is just one of the many examples of the duality of life that is completely ongoing. Or just look at any kind of argument that you might have had with someone, right? Like the fact that there's a strong belief on one side that one person is right for the following reasons, yet the other person also believes that they're right. Those two things are true, but they can be true at the same time, technically, if it's two sides of an argument, which means they're also both false. So I think that's something that's so important for people to, especially for discourse, to kind of capture, you're wrong because I don't agree with you, but at the same time, I kind of get that you feel that you might be right for the following reasons. I think that would just really help discourse overall if everyone could put a little bit of water in their wine, at least in how they see these kinds of situations.
Oh, absolutely. That would be create so much more harmony in the world. I feel like we could just kind of accept. Yeah, I think especially today when we all have so many people have so many opposing views that are refusing to just bury their kind of feet in the sand and are not wanting or willing to cross the lines into seeing one another's point of view. And that's been such a, I've had so many people kind of reference, like kind of funny, tell me, I'm not trying to brag, but tell me that I'm like Buddha-like or something. But to me, I think it's been that acceptance that's kind of created this peace for me is that, oh, if someone says something mean to me, it doesn't really affect me. It doesn't bother me. And people see that and think I'm just like this amazing, strong person. But I've come to realize whatever they're saying is their truth for them. And, you know, I don't have to accept it. I don't have to take it on for myself anymore. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, those types of really intense emotions that we could take more seriously. I've gotten to a point where I don't for the most part. It's really healing.
Yeah, I can feel that.
So I would love to dive into your burnout journey a little bit more. I'm kind of a fan of burnout. That sounds awful. just because I love meeting people who realize they were burnout and did something about it. Because I see it happening so much. I have a husband who works in a very corporate setting, and when he comes home and he'll talk about it, and in the back of my mind, I'm just thinking of all the burnout things I've heard and all the lessons I've heard from other people. And so I would be really like to hear your story and kind of how maybe you got to the point of burnout and how you realized it wasn't sustainable anymore.
Well, first of all, shout out to your husband, the long-suffering corporate trooper. I can totally relate. What's his name?
Tom.
Tom, hello. Shout out, Tom. We see you. Gosh. I think there's so many ways to approach the topic of burnout. I think there's two things that spring to mind when I talk about it. There is a physical, emotional, and an almost spiritual manifestation, right? Kind of a whole body experience. Actually, no, that's the one thing that stands out. It is all those elements coming together. But I think if I were to add something, it's also the result of almost, you know, the water torture when you have like a drop on your forehead.
Yeah.
And then at some point, that's it. You can't take it anymore. You know, the other way I can maybe give an image is it's just you get to a friction point that just isn't sustainable any longer. Look, I worked for 14 years for a big corporation, a few years in Canada. And then, you know, they moved us over to London to work at the head office, you know, including my wife. It gave me so much. I learned so many things, and I'm still using so many of the tools that I picked up as a result of having this experience with this, you know, FTSE 5 company. Yet I don't regret leaving, and I don't miss it at all. And now that I'm out of it and I'm looking backwards, I'm like, man, that was insane. That's crazy. How did I put myself through that for so many years? And I don't think it was all the years, right? I think it really started happening, I'd say probably from mid 2010s, definitely late 2010s, where I just started to take on more responsibilities. And then COVID happened, and, you know, COVID was pretty much shit for everyone, wasn't it? Yeah. Nobody had a fantastic time, at least not that I know of. And it just seemed at that point there was a succession of events, including COVID at a very macro level, but then that precipitated this position I found myself in on an early July morning in 2020, the first time that lockdown had been released in England. I live in London. And Tash and I had gotten a cottage that had been sanitized, you know, to an inch of its life. And throughout this week off, I kept waking up in a panic at 5:30 in the morning. Just, you know, that pressure on your chest that you get from too much anxiety, and just thinking, what is happening? And I was thinking about all the emails I would have to go back to because nobody knew how to do my job. My boss didn't, his boss didn't, his boss's boss didn't. And those were all the kind of the, you know, the succession of elements that had happened. And I felt like I was drowning. And those were kind of that time in July 2020 were kind of the first rumbles of going, something is fundamentally broken. And now just as an aside, I look back at pictures of myself from that time. I was probably like 12, 13 kilos under this current weight. I look like I was like, I was gray. I was even grayer. My hair was white instead of gray. Like I was a different person physically, but obviously didn't see that at the time. And neither did Tash because, she lived with me. And by the way, she does musical theater and teaches yoga. So lockdown wasn't very generous to her either. Right? She couldn't do any of those things. And we were in our small London flat, on top of each other and not in the good way. So I think all of these things kind of culminated, and I had this breaking moment where I came back from holiday and I had a series of conversations with about 10 different people over a 2 week period leading to the end of July, and literally 14 years to the day on the 31st of July, 2020. Yeah, 14 years to the day since I had started this company, I handed in my notice to my manager. No safety net, by the way. I'd had a bunch of conversations. People were saying, like, you need to use your current job to move on to your next job and everything. But no, something was broken. And thankfully, we were enough in a financial position to kind of absorb whatever time period I was going to spend, looking for work or whatever it was. But I knew something was off, and I'd already started to do a bit of thinking about. I think the biggest realization was probably the notion that I woke up that morning and I really clued into the fact that I'd been doing for such a long time something that was so far removed from who I was. And then the second realization was, I don't even know who the hell I am because I've never really thought about it or explored that at all. So yeah, I'll stop there. But that was kind of like the kind of lead up.
That's so brave. And then, so I guess I would ask you, because I talk a lot about, we decided to downsize our house, and we had moved into our big, beautiful dream house, and we sold it for a smaller house. And people ask me how, and I say, kind of, I ran upstairs. I told Tom, I said, I think we should sell the house because I just wanted to kind of restart. Are you in the middle of a really big life transition right now? Maybe you can't put your finger on it, but you know a big change is happening in your life. Maybe you're shifting careers, taking a trip, changing your relationship status, or you just feel like you're being called to do more with your life, even though you're not sure what it is. If so, I totally get it. I was there 10 years ago, and I started working to find little ways to pivot and shift my life so that I could start to align with this vision or this feeling that I had for all the things that I was meant for. And I call it the escape plan. That's why I put it all into a 40-day audio series to help you make those big changes really simple. So if you have loved tuning into the podcast, you are going to love this 40-day downloadable audio series where I walk you through the process of letting go, creating space, and making the right moves so that you can welcome all of these big changes into your life. This audio series is officially launching April 1st, no joke, but you can order it on pre-sale before then. Just head to reneebennis.com/escape. That's reneebennis.com/escape. But that's such a big, scary thing. So the idea of walking away from a job, something that's secure and safe and that you've been in for 14 years, I mean, I guess I know you shared, but how did you feel the courage to just say, this is just what I have to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. I was told recently that I tend to gloss over this aspect of this transformation, this switch. So I've been challenged to dig a bit more into it. Let me use what you've just said as a starting point. You talked about your dream house. Well, when you decided to downsize it and make it a smaller house, it wasn't your dream house anymore. The dream wasn't actually the dream, right? I think it's the same thing, right? I'm going to use the exact same analogy. The dream that I had with Which was a dream that actually probably wasn't wholly mine. It was a dream that I grew up in because I'd seen my parents, work in corporate gigs, for most of their lives and climb up the greasy pole and, make more money and buy bigger houses and live very comfortably from a material standpoint. That's the only model I kind of knew. And even when I went to university, I wanted to do, I don't know, comms or journalism or something like that. And my mom suggested I go in business first and then maybe do a master's in communication, you know, have some substance. Not, don't only be like a parrot that just talks about stuff, but understand what you're talking about. Like, on the whole, great and very sound advice. But it was also kind of that path of, well, okay, now I've got a business degree in international studies or whatever. So, all right, what do I do? And then when I finished, you know, when I graduated uni, I worked at HMV for 9 months selling DVDs back when HMV still kind of existed and DVDs were still a thing that people bought. And then after that, it was, okay, well, we need to get you, you need to like make money, right? And that's how I started my life. But I never really questioned that path. I guess the dream was kind of, right, keep going up in the company, which is what I did. You know, I had, I don't know, 10 outstanding ratings out of 14 years. You know, I was doing really well. I was overperforming. And until none of that was enough, there was like, despite the fact that I was pulling in six figures and I had all the benefits and I was climbing up the greasy pole. And actually, I'd literally at the beginning of 2020 had just gotten a promotion into a brand new role and everything. I had never felt emptier, right? I couldn't fill that dream with all the things I thought I wanted. Again, going back to your house analogy. So your question was, how did I have the courage? I think there was no alternative. I really feel like it was just a question of hitting the bottom and going, I can't go any lower now. And I will, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I was emotionally and intellectually drained. I was drinking too much. Actually, as a sequence of that, I stopped drinking for 2.5 years, just kind of reset my relationship with alcohol. I was negative. Like everything was, I was actually probably as a person, the physical representation of who I, what I look like, right? This gray, I have this Gollum kind of feature in my head when I talk about this, when I think about myself at the time. So everything was kind of fundamentally not working inside, which was reflected on the outside. But then I also tore my ACL, which, yeah, in my right knee, which to me was the last sign that the universe was basically saying, you need to stop everything. You need a complete reset, emotional, spiritual, and physical. Stop moving, stop doing anything. So maybe what gave me the courage to do this was just having enough self-awareness, because I've also read like tons of self-help book. And this is something my mom gave me, which I'm really grateful for, is the notion of enjoying reading and discovering about these deeper things, right? Conversations with God, The Untethered Soul, like these kinds of books. So I think at that point, it was the culmination of, well, I'm getting all the signs from the universe that I need to stop. And I'm also quite self-aware enough to know that something is fundamentally broken. So I'm not even sure if it was courage so much as this is the evidence that's presented and that's the only way forward. And I kind of have to trust that I am eminently employable. I've been working for this company. I've had great results. So what's the worst case scenario? Well, going back to where I was, right? And continuing doing what I'm doing. But I think I really trusted myself in kind of moving forward. And I had a lot of people's support as well. I think a big turning point as well was getting like support from my parents, like having a chat with them. I was like anxious because, you know, they were like corporate people for their whole lives. But they saw me and they were like, no, it's fine. We've got your back. Don't worry about it. If you need anything, you call us. And I think that was very helpful. So a combination, to answer your question succinctly, maybe for the edits, a combination of external circumstances that were beyond my control, i.e. the universe, my own self-awareness, and a lot of tangible support from the people around me were kind of what brought me to this culmination of, okay, things need to change and I just need to make it happen now. Otherwise, yeah, there was no otherwise. I didn't know what the alternative was going to be.
Oh, I relate to that very much. I think I had this thought like, well, yeah, if I at least try, I'll know I tried. If I don't, when am I going to get to like age 90 and think back on what would have happened if I would have done, you know? And it was like, I could kind of see where I was headed with the life that we were living and the way we were going. And it was like, I don't want to go there. That doesn't seem good. So I may as well try the alternate route and see, you know, maybe that's better.
What do you tell people when they ask, well, how did you make such a, I mean, maybe for them, what seems like a life-changing or huge impactful decision? What do you tell them?
Basically that it was, I could tell that where we were going wasn't leading me anywhere good. My life was getting worse. It was feeling awful. And I thought, well, like I could at least try. If everything falls apart, at least I tried something different because where I was going wasn't working. And I like what you said about, you know, the dream not really being yours. That's something I say a lot about the big house, because that's what, you know, especially in America, it's like a bigger house, better everything. And I've done a lot of soul searching and realized that I think it was movies that kind of did it to me. So I went through a lot of divorces. My mom got divorced. My parents divorced each other. They divorced other people. It was just lots of divorces. And I always wanted a solid family unit. And so I would see these movies. I always think Father of the Bride. Father of the Bride was the movie I watched, and it made me realize, oh my gosh, this is why I thought this, because Steve Martin talks a lot about his house. He's, I love this house. This is where my family grew up, in this house. And we have all these memories from this house. And I think some part of me was like, oh, the house is part of the family. That's what I need, the house to have the solid family package, which I didn't realize until, you know, years later. But then to get the house and have everything kind of fall apart went against what my brain thought was going to work out for me. But it wasn't my dream, or it was a false dream or something like that. Something that I was led to believe would work for me, and it didn't, which made it really easy to start walking away from. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I was just going to ask, like, how long did you ignore those internal signals that something was off? Or did you immediately were like, wow, this dream house actually isn't the dream house, and it's not leading me where I want?
It was pretty quick. I think we listed the house, I want to say a year after we moved in, or pretty close to a year and a half-ish. Because things started just, and for me, the realization was giving tours of the house.
I know exactly what you mean. How did it feel internally? Tell me about, like, where did you experience that disconnect? Was it in your gut? Was it in your chest? What did it feel like?
Yeah, it's all internal. I'm a very strong feeling person. So it's kind of funny when we talk about thoughts, I don't have the voices in my head. Like, I know people say that they've got the different voices. For me, it's kind of, I go with a feeling first, and then I have to interpret what the feeling's trying to say to me. It was just like, almost like a sinking feeling. It just felt sinking. It just was something in me that was like, this just doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. It feels left, you know, where when I'm in a good place or when I'm doing something that's aligned with what I should be doing, it feels very freeing. It feels really easy. I feel at peace with it.
Is it the opposite of sinking in terms of this? Do you feel lighter when you're doing something that feels right?
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like there's not a weight on my chest, you know?
Yeah. Bingo. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really important, and I wanted to get those words out of you because, first of all, it's something that I try to help clients with. Not everyone thinks the same way, which is one of the things I think that stands out from what you just said, right? And I literally just use the word think because I think I'm a thinker. I'm not necessarily a feeler. But one of the big things in coaching is to try to provide or help people do a bit more of a mind-body connection. And so kind of explaining or getting people to find the words to explain how you're feeling about things is absolutely an indicator that something might be off. So I hope anyone listening right now is kind of, or watching right now, can maybe get something from that, right? You have signals, whether they're in their head or in your body. I think it's really important to pay attention to them from a very primeval atavistic kind of perspective, right? Like from, you know, the age of like sapiens, like thousands of years ago, you've got these signals. But I think it's easy to get lost because we get bombarded by so many external signals now, and it can be tough to kind of connect with what we're feeling. Meditation, for example, for me, was really good for that. I mentioned that earlier, right? Starting a practice where I just was more in touch with my thoughts, but also what my body was experiencing. And like you, now I get a better sense of something being off by how I'm feeling about it.
So did you do meditation before, or was this just a totally newer practice?
Yeah, that was new. Headspace, man. I think if there's one person I would love to meet and shake their hands is Andy, who founded Headspace, like the ex-monk. Andy, if you're listening, I'd love to meet you and shake your hand. His voice just led me through all these difficult times. And yeah, I used the app for a year. I gifted it as well to certain people. But I think like with any kind of self-reflective, self-realizing practice, people need to be at the right point to pick them up, just like coaching, actually. Like, it's right when it's right for you at the moment. But meditation was something that I started with 2 minutes a day, you know, building a habit, and then moved to 5 minutes. And then I went up to half an hour, and then I realized, no, that's too long. And now my meditation practice is every morning after I wake up, 15 minutes when I'm awake in bed. And if I can't do that, then I'll do it in the middle of the afternoon. But yes, it's a regular daily thing. Yeah, it's been really helpful. Even just to tune in and go, okay, what's the story today? Yeah, crazy work. What else? Money. Interesting. Cool. How am I feeling about all this? All right. No, it's okay. This isn't stressing me out. So I know, like, I can start my day and be confident that I've tuned in. I can be like, okay, cool. I've had this moment of connecting with myself first thing. And that's been really helpful.
Yeah, that's true. I do really well with journaling, maybe because, I mean, maybe journaling is great for everybody, but also maybe because sometimes I have a tough time with what my thoughts are. You know, I just know what I'm feeling. Journaling helps me get it out. And I'm kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, that's what was going on. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that was bouncing around. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't do well with journaling, but that's it. I've never really thought about that kind of difference. So I think you being slightly different in how you're absorbing information and, yeah, kind of experiencing information. I've heard a lot of my coaching clients talk about how journaling is useful for them, but I've never really used it myself, to be honest with you. Coaching is a great space to be able to externalize and listen to yourself. But if you're not a very auditive person, that can be a bit more challenging, which is why I do encourage note-taking. Man, I'm getting so much good stuff from this conversation, like new realizations. This is really cool.
Well, good. I'm glad. That's the whole point, right? So now you're kind of working with these different clients and helping people kind of find their purpose. Is this, you know, I know it's partially because of the burnout, the experience that you had of not knowing your purpose. Did you kind of go through finding and knowing yourself and then realizing I want to help other people do this? Or did it kind of, like, similar to me, did it all just kind of happen together?
I think I applied quite an intellectually rigorous process to it, but I think we've established I'm a bit of a thinker. So I think that's like a natural, whereas what you're saying is kind of like I felt it, you know, it all came together, you know, yeah, like some kind of magic cauldron. I did approach it in a very intellectual way, right? So I started doing that work about me. I watched a lot of TED Talks, Simon Sinek's How Great Leaders Inspire Action, which is basically the TED Talk from his book, Start With Why, was a really big piece for me. And I always think about Brené Brown, Vulnerability and Shame. I think that was really good as well. And Ethan Hawke has a fantastic TED Talk about just playing the clown, being an artist, like creating for the sake of creating, that really resonated with me. But I think from an intellectual standpoint, it was really the Simon Sinek piece. And I was like, okay, well, if companies, obviously this is from 2014, so he talks a lot about Apple, and it's Apple this and Apple that, which is, you know, fair. I was like, if companies can use this model, and I worked with a company for so long, and actually I worked in corporate communications, and I work with the board of directors to explain the strategy to employees, then why don't I just connect those two things together? And so I dressed up a one pager as if I was Jean-Francois Inc., my own business. I was like, cool, what are my fundamental core values? As if I were a business, you know, a legal entity. Okay, I think these are it. Go off, experience them a bit, because that's really important, right? You say, yeah, I want to be open, and, you know, integrity is one of them, and I know curiosity is one of them. Are those actually true IRL? Then I had the purpose statement. So I had the bookends, basically, right? My ultimate purpose in life, which I then translated into a vision statement. And the toughest part really was the mission, because the mission, if you think about it from a corporate framework, actually is like 2 to 5 years. And it's a little bit crunchier. There needs to be a bit of action in there. Under your mission, usually you'll have your pillars, right? Your objective, strategic objective pillars and whatnot. So I got the purpose, the core values, and I had the vision statement, and the mission was kind of loosey-goosey, but that's where I also kind of operated on the notion that, okay, cool, well, I know my purpose is to help others realize their purpose, and my vision is of a world where collective realization is achieved through self-realization. I know what my core values are: openness, curiosity, courage, integrity, and unity. How do I make all of this stick together, and how do I achieve this vision and this purpose? And then that's when, after speaking with a few coaches, I was like, this is such a powerful practice, because coaching actually provides the space for everyone to really kind of sit in their own expertise of themselves. I think that one of the challenges, a lot of people delegate that, right? Go back to your example. Steve Martin talking about his house, right? I need a big house. This is the dream. It's somebody else's dream. It's Hollywood's dream, maybe, or it's capitalism's dream, or so. I think we've done a lot of that, right? Delegating our kind of life, and coaching actually forces you in a way to kind of look inside and go, what are your actual ambitions and dreams? What are your values? What are the beliefs that you have? Oh, are those your beliefs actually? Actually, no, they're my parents' belief. Okay, interesting. So are your parents' belief your beliefs? Well, actually, maybe not. So getting into these conversations, and that's why coaching is so powerful. It's not about giving you the answers, because the notion is that you have all the answers that you need for yourself, because you're the only expert on yourself in the whole wide world. So once I kind of had clicked on that, I was like, man, coaching is fantastic. So I'm going to train as a coach. And then immediately, I found that there was so many opportunities. The business, the industry is completely unregulated and massively fragmented. So I was thinking, how can we pull everything together and provide a broader platform to help connect coaches who really want to help people self-realize? That's why coaches become coaches, really. And people who are ready for this kind of like conversation to happen. That's how everything kind of culminated. So there was the intellectual practice, right? I need to do this. There's the strategy behind it. This is what my one pager about who I am, Jean-François Inc. Then how do I make this happen? Okay, great. I'm going to take a coaching course. And then I'm going to build a platform. But what's also interesting in that is while I had my own agency, right? My own agency was behind it. I feel like the universe provided the right people at the right time. I'll give you an example. In January 2021, I had a passing conversation with a man I really respect. His name is Jide, and he's built the first and biggest comic book platform in Africa called Comic Republic. And they do African diaspora superheroes, supervillains stories, basically. It's fantastic. We're having a lockdown might be ending soon kind of coffee walk outside. And I was telling him, like, oh, coaching is so great and I want to do something with it. I want to do something bigger. And he's like, why don't you just create a coaching platform? I was like, okay, cool. That sounds great. I have no idea how to do this. A week later, I get a message from my co-founder out of the blue. He's, oh, I want to present something to you, you know, in a few days. Are you free Friday? So I sat down and he asked how I was, and I just word vomited everything that was happening and like the coaching. And I was like, man, I want to create like a platform to connect coaches and clients together. I have no idea where to start. And then he was like, hang on a second. And he put up a 25 slide presentation about a platform to connect mentors and mentees together that he had just been thinking about for the past few weeks. And I was like, oh my God, you've basically done all the hard yards. You've just looked at a slightly different kind of industry, mentorship instead of coaching. I'm like, can we switch this to coaching? And we have pretty much everything we need to get going. And that's how Wabia started in Q1 2021. So I'm fully aware that, and I think this is a key bit, right? There was a lot of agency, as in using everything that I am and feeling like inspired to create all of this. But there was also kind of one side, how do I put this again without being too spiritual, right? Letting the Holy Spirit fill me. I was almost driven because I didn't have to worry about my corporate job or anything like that. All I had to focus on was how do I create everything I've discovered about myself? How do I realize that? And suddenly all the opportunities came out of the woodwork. And over the last few years, it's been one thing after another. We were running out because we're fully self-funded, right? We were running out of money. And then suddenly, you know, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. My grandfather passed away. And there was a life insurance that I wasn't really aware that he had that came to me. And that kind of kept funding the business, right? So as soon as I got out of the way of this thing that moves through me, whatever you want to call it, suddenly doors and windows started opening. So sorry, long-winded answer, but yeah, I was really intellectually driven at first, but then realizing, I guess, through this monologue that, yeah, there's a sense of being an instrument as well, if that makes sense. Oh man, I've never verbalized it like that. So thank you for giving me a space to do that.
Oh, absolutely. That's amazing. And I think that's something I personally feel like I myself and everybody else need to kind of reconnect with the idea that, you know, doors will open if you just start walking, you know, kind of thing. If you start following, mm-hmm. and that's something I've kind of like a little mantra I've been saying to myself is the thing, it will work out if I continue to follow what I'm feeling called to go toward. Because I love to panic about what could go wrong or what won't work out or that I have to try harder. I have to do more, or I have to make sure this is better. I put it so much on me versus trusting that if I follow that purpose, that calling on my heart, I'll be taken care of along the way. So the fact that you happen to have someone already create the model for you and have the finances there to support you is such a great reminder, I think, that we need to put a little bit more trust into. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's funny that you said the Holy Spirit will be. I have a Holy Spirit little tattoo on my ankle because I call it my Holy Spirit voice, like that internal knowing that knowing that I have and trusting that more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, trust is my word of the year as well, because it's not always that clear to me, right? There are moments of doubts. You said something that really stood out to me. What do you love about panicking?
What do I love about panicking? Oh, we have an hour so I can think on this. I need to get my journal. I don't know. That's a good question, though. I think that's something I'm probably going to have to dive into. I think I like, or maybe I want so badly to feel like I'm in control. I want to be able to be in control of things. So I feel like I try to over control. And I, for me, it's letting go of knowing that I'm not going to have all of the answers. I'm not going to be able to control everything. I'm not going to be able to see all of what's coming at me. You know, like people say, control what you can. But I think I'm that kind of person that's, well, I can control everything. You know what I mean? It's hard to blur that line or, you know where to stop. If that makes any sense.
What does feeling control give you? Like when we talked about feelings, right? What does it make you feel like when you feel like you're in control?
I think I didn't have much control in a lot of parts of my life when I really wanted to, maybe. So it gives me a sense of control. Stability, something solid that I can kind of count on, you know?
I mean, there's an implication in the word trust. Like just makes me think like jumping without a net or falling backwards and like someone's going to catch you or something's going to, you know, cushion your fall, or you're going to land on your butt and it's going to hurt. Like being okay with either or. I fully get what you're saying, by the way. It's not, I see that narrative stream in my head as kind of the panicky, oh shit, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but what if this happens and what if that happens? And then what if this doesn't happen? What if that doesn't happen? But if we get that answer, then we don't do that. Like all of this is just this voice trying to kind of feel safe and secure. I've never said it like that, but I think that's what it is. And I think everyone has this shared experience of like how when you don't know what's going to happen, you don't feel secure. I mean, think about it from thousands of years ago, right? If we didn't know what was going to happen, we would die. So I think there's like this, again, this primordial kind of element to us that really wants to understand where our next meal is going to come from. But I think it's evolved into these more, man, am I going to feel fulfilled tomorrow? It's the kind of like discourse we're having right now. Oh my God, am I going to feel fulfilled? Oh God, I'm so self-aware. This is so difficult. Do you know what I mean? I think we need to like be able to laugh at ourselves a little bit more. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. I love the Wayne Dyer, and he said something in one of his talks once, and this has kind of been another thing I've had to say to myself a lot, is stop taking yourself so damn seriously, because I definitely do. I think it's all on me. I think I have to be in control. I kind of almost do too much deep dive work. I need to journal more. I need to understand more, where it's just maybe lighten up a little bit, not take it so seriously, you know?
Is your husband quite easygoing? Because I know Tash is a lot more go with the flow. If there's nothing to do, she's not going to fill it with tasks. I will. But Tash is very grounded. Hey, we have nothing on the agenda. We don't need to put anything on the agenda. I'm going to do a puzzle for an hour on the kitchen table. Whereas I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to listen to music, but I'm going to organize these songs into different playlists. You know, like I have that personality. So you're saying you don't have that balance then in your couple?
No. So I would say I'm probably more the laid back person, which maybe sounds really sad. I feel like maybe certain parts of him that are laid back have balanced the parts of me that aren't, and then vice versa, yeah. Where he's the person who is always more likely to be busy, always got to be moving. Oh, excuse me, here I go. Where I'm okay with the sitting and doing a puzzle and just relaxing for a little bit. But then I have these other times, I think, where I feel like I have to take charge and we have to get something done. And he'll kind of laugh at the situation. And I can kind of, you know, he kind of brings me back down in those senses and I bring him back down. So we're half balance of crazy.
Yeah, no, well, I think that's the thing. When you meet your person and you're great, I've got somebody who's got my back no matter what. And that's how I feel about Tash, to be honest with you. And I mean, she's got her crazy, which I balance out. Yeah, cool.
That's necessary, right? Well, thank you so much. This has been so amazing. Where can people find you for next steps if they want to learn more about? So I suppose this is a question I should have asked sooner, but do you have resources for people who want to be coaches or who want to be connected as coaches and people who want to be connected with coaches?
Yeah, absolutely. You can hit up our website, which is www.wabya.com. And Wabya is W-A-B-Y-A. WABYA is an acronym for We Are Because You Are. So again, even in our name, we've built in this notion of the individual and the collective being indivisible. So WABYA.com, you can find us on Instagram at We Are Because You Are, or on YouTube at We Are Because You Are. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. You just need my name, which I'm sure if you're listening to this, you can see somewhere in the description of something. And don't hesitate to drop me a line, connect on LinkedIn, even on a one-to-one basis. You know, I'd love to, I just want to help people. So if I can help you in any way, yeah, I'd be happy to do it. Yeah. And that's it. I guess we're going to stop the recording and I'd love to ask about next step, by the way. That's how.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you. Are you wanting to next step?
Sorry, yeah, I don't know how this normally ends. I guess I'm ruining your ending right now.
Do you really it's okay.
No, because I just wanted to stay on for just a couple of minutes after we're done recording, if that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. I'll pause stop the recording. Well, thank you so much, Jean-Francois, for being on.
After our family downsized our house, we started working to pay off debt and build an actual savings. Because for decades, I would transfer $100 to our savings account, but then I would end up transferring it right back to our checking when we had overspent. So when we downsized, I decided to get serious about saving money for things like emergencies and for fun things like travel. The first thing I did was open a high-yield savings account that was separate from our current checking account. That way, it wouldn't be as easy for me to just pull money out whenever I felt like I needed it. And I knew it would force me to take my spending and my saving a lot more seriously. So if you are in a similar boat and are hoping to up your game when it comes to saving money, one of the absolute best accounts to get started is called Savings Connect. This is a savings account that pays close to 5% when you set an automatic savings deposit of just $100 per month. This is 11 times the national average, which means if you use a current savings account that's attached to your checking, there's a good chance you are not making nearly enough money. So if you're at a place in life where you're committed to changing your financial future and you actually want to start getting some money in the bank, you can get started with a Savings Connect account for as little as $100. Just head to reneebennis.com/save to learn more, and I will fill you in on all of the details. That's reneebennis.com/save. to learn more.
Hey again, thanks so much for hanging out with me today on the Unstuffed podcast. It means so much that you chose to carve out some of your precious time just to hang out with me. If you aren't quite ready for our time to end, head to the show notes where you can grab my free declutter checklist, join my newsletter subscription, and connect with me on some of your favorite social platforms. Sending you so much love. Until next time.